Wem.
And I'm Lewis.
This is the Forest School Podcast.
Let's go!
Right. Oh, look, we're all having a little drink. I mean, Lewis having a little drink. Ah, Kat's got a drink. What have you got to drink, Kat?
I've got coffee.
Nice. Oh, with caffeine?
With caffeine. It doesn't really affect me because of the ADHD.
No.
Strong.
Oh. You know, I'm stronger than the caffeine.
Amazing. Well, thanks, Kat, so much for joining us. We invited you because we really want to talk about, I'm going to call it game schooling, because like that was just a term I first came across when I started home ed my kids. And we ended up going to this group, which was like kind of physical activities for about an hour first, and then like game schooling afterwards. And this amazing mom like just brought all these incredible games that I'd heard of and just chucked them all out, and then we all just played. And she just sort of told me a little bit about how that was a real key part of the way that they home educated. And I really liked that as a term, game schooling. And then it's kind of been top of our minds because at our Forest School groups, we've had a kind of new interest in kids bringing along board games, card games, tabletop games, and bringing them from home and just like spontaneously. And then sometimes some adults have brought some, and we've ended up kind of playing games in the woods, and it's been
magical.
It's been a real passion of theirs. And then it kind of like has been a kind of, I don't know, especially an interesting topic, because then there's always that thing of like, but is this Forest School? Like, we believe it is. But then other people might have this view of like, oh, is that really like, you know, really, what's the point? Why would you go to the woods and then just like, just play games there? And it's kind of like an interesting topic. I think listeners might have some thoughts on. And I followed you on social media for a while, and I suddenly remembered you, and I thought, oh, I'm sure that you'd have something to say about this. So that's kind of why I thought of you. But just for the benefit of our listeners, do you want to say a little bit about yourself and what you do and how you work with young people?
Yeah, sure. So I'm also a home educator. So I sort of come to it from having my own undiagnosed ADHD and autism when I was a kid, and then realizing that I had those diagnoses and so did my child. And so now that they are a bit older and I find that they're more independent and I have time, I'm trying to use everything that I've learned and all of my experience to help other families and kids with additional needs. So I do mentoring and enabling, not just within the home ed community. It's turned out I have some in the home ed community, some who are school going or struggling to access education at the moment. So I go in and I sort of call it big sister mentoring. Because a lot of the dynamic that I have with those kids is really inspired by my own. I have a 9-year-old sister, which we have a 25-year age gap. And it's pretty awesome. It's a really interesting dynamic relationship that we have. And it kind of echoes a bit because I was really young when I had my child. And so I've never really identified with the label of mother. So I've always just had kind of a genuine relationship, whatever it was, with them. And so I just bring that. I'm not very good at doing things, you know, professionally or bringing it down a level. So I just kind of bring my whole self to what I do. It's kind of hard to like package that all up into a neat little answer because it's every kid is different. And so everything I do is different and every week is different for every one of those different kids. So I have to be thinking on my feet, being very creative with the ways that we do stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. So you're kind of following their interests and being what they need.
Yeah, totally. I'm completely child-led. There's a lot of playing, like tabletop games, video games, whatever it takes to find that like safe space to engage and take the pressure off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like one of the questions that I was thinking around, like board games and stuff. And one of the things I kind of sent in advance about something we might want to talk about in terms of like, yeah, creating a safe space.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know really how to put it. I don't know if you've got any thoughts about that, about, you know, what happens.
It's not about the physical space. It's about that mental space. And I find the same with like doing artistic projects, like, you know, different kids respond to different things. So I just find that anything that keeps your hands busy and means that there's no pressure to make eye contact. That's how I feel most comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's how a lot of my kids feel most comfortable. And I think that it's the safe headspace. Once you've like kind of taken that pressure off of the interaction, then you can really build up the relationship and figure out how you're interacting together and building up trust. So I use like a combination of competitive and cooperative games when I play with kids, because it's important. And I don't ever let anyone win. I think that's really important too. I think that's a really big part of that trust is like, you know, my kids know that if they beat me, they genuinely beat me. I'm not, you know, gonna let them get away with something.
Yeah.
And even that, like being able to do that is kind of a win in those relationships sometimes too.
That's really interesting. That reminds me of something that a child said to me this week. And it wasn't a tabletop top game. It was, you know, imaginative running around the forest kind of game. But they said to me, okay, so, and you're the tagger and this is the rules of the game. This is how it works. And, you know, so I listened to all the information and they said, and one last rule, when you run and you chase, you actually have to run at your full speed because it's so annoying. When a grown-up like pretends to run really fast and then actually they're not and they could have caught us and they haven't, that's so annoying.
I love that.
That's so interesting, isn't it? It's just like the thing.
It's respect. Yeah. That's what I think. Like if a grown-up allows a child to win, it says, you know, a lot about what they think of that child's abilities. So I think that's... And I think that comes down to respect. A lot of the times we really like infantilize kids. When we shouldn't, we should just talk to them like they're people, because they are.
Yeah. Do you think there's within that though, also obviously oneself as the adult is choosing the game and the scenario that is appropriate for that child? So, you know, if you're kind of bringing out something that, you know, they never have a hope in hell of ever even coming close to winning, that there's obviously something in that about knowing the child and having a kind of knowledge about what games or activities are available.
Yeah.
Choose it.
Yeah, I guess. So there are times when I guess I feel like, obviously we make that decision about what we're bringing out. And at times there is, especially working with kids who are resistant to forming a relationship. Sometimes I do feel like it's not unethical. I think I have those like black and white, I don't see gray area. So for me, I'm like, is it okay that I'm manipulating this child by choosing one that I know is gonna work for them? So in that way. Yeah.
What you were saying earlier about sort of keeping hands busy and not having to do eye contact and building trust and communication and stuff reminded me a lot of things I've read and heard about play therapy. That kind of you know, and it might take a long time of just playing, in inverted commas, in this kind of play space, whether that be the board game or a sand tray or whatever, and it might just take weeks of just playing before the child feels able to speak about what's really important to them and to build that kind of trust. And I hadn't really thought about it as deeply as that, I guess, with playing tabletop games and board games in the forest. But I think there is that potential there if adults are, as you say, kind of being respectful and and ready to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any examples of like of games that might be, because you mentioned cooperative and the other and competitive
board game.
There were a few like come to mind in each of those categories that you think.
So one that I use a lot is Forbidden Island, which I think has gotten quite popular, which I'm really happy to see. It's a, I think it's Game Right. It is.
Yeah, Forbidden Island. And then what's the other one? Forbidden.
Forbidden Desert and Sky. Forbidden Sky.
I just have the, but yeah.
Oh, it's impossible. It is impossible. My kid and I have tried it. You have to build a circuit whilst on a floating platform in the sky, which you can be blown off of. You have to like go around, complete circuits, build towers, and the circuit has to be complete in order to make a rocket ship go. Wow. Which is cool because it's actually you're actually completing an electrical circuit as you play the game. And then when you do it, the rocket ship can light up.
Whoa.
But we have not yet seen that little rocket ship light up.
So games like that, I always think one of the things that there's a few things I really like about board games. One thing I really like is that compared to like a video game, the game only exists if you all agree to play it in the same way. Like the board doesn't like that electrical example sort of breaks what I'm talking about, because what I mean is like with most games, like if you have a set of Monopoly, you can make up that free parking rule or whatever it is. And as long as everyone at the table goes, this will be the rule, then that's fine. It doesn't matter that the game doesn't like catch fire if you play it wrong, or, you know, compared to like a video game that will like go, no, that's a wall. You can't jump through that. You can't, you know, you don't get access to that thing yet. The board game, you can go, well, we're going to get these pieces out early. Or like, I was thinking of them.
Yeah. And I mean, that kind of brings us to role-playing games, even where there's no board. Like, I don't know if any of the kids you work with are into D&D.
Yeah,
it's gotten really big in the last few years, which is awesome. It's really, really fun to see. And I kind of DM a little bit mini adventures for some of my kids. Nothing really too invested at this point, but that's a whole other, you know, you agree on an entire universe that only exists. Yeah, like you said, because you all agree that it does.
That was quite a lot of this afternoon at Forest School, actually, was Lewis DMing a... They don't call it D&D, though. They call it the dice game.
Like gambling. I always think you're going to get pulled up. Like, if we're playing dice in the woods. Yeah, man. Dice.
Yeah, it really held their attention for a long time today. And it was,
And it's great, because especially with that, because there's so much flexibility. You're building that world and that story together, so you can figure out ways to draw in kids who are maybe not engaging as much. You can feed them what they need and work together and problem solve, like just all of the different skills that you can reinforce while you're doing that team working, problem solving. It's beautiful. Yeah,
and I think as soon as if you just take the dice, the way we do with the kids that we've got at the moment is so fucking loose, right? It's like the most bare bones. I am barely drawing a map. They have no character sheets. They just go, I think my character can do this. And I go, okay. Basically.
The rule of cool.
But I think it's something... Like, that is such a small sidestep from role-playing, with just role-playing, not gaming, just role-playing. Like, you have a mud kitchen and the kids pretend they're running a shop. And, like, nobody questions that that is a part of Forest School. And, like, that is a part of, you know, authentic play. That is a play type. It fits in this thing. And even if you have, like... You can extend it even further and go, okay, well, if you have one person, which sometimes you do in a play cycle, who is basically like directing the play, going, oh, now you're the customer. Okay, now you come over here. Oh, and imagine you buy this thing. Oh, and imagine you get that thing. And then you're such a small step away from a tabletop game at that point. All you've done is like increase, you know, added that random chance element that makes it a game, which is, you know, I find it so interesting that it's seen as very othered, I think, or very like, in the way that lots of people who do Forest School would go, it's not just playing, but lots of that community still would go, but board games are just playing. You know what I mean? It's like, you've just got to wonder.
It's weirdly purist, I think, to have a problem with how your kids choose to spend their time in the woods.
Yeah. And then, but then purism has its own, you know, everybody has a line that they draw somewhere, and that's what defines people's practice and what is and isn't part of their Forest School. I think a massive thing, and I wonder whether you've come across this in your work, is like my view on whether it's like, I don't think whether I would say it is or isn't Forest School, because I think that's a slightly convoluted question to start putting things in boxes of like is, isn't. It's like, whether it's an appropriate tool all the time depends on the, I think the biggest factor is like the length of the session and the needs of the learners. If I was in a, because I was talking to my wife about this, and she said, well, if I sent the kids, our kids home ed, right? But she said, if I sent them to school and they said, oh, they were doing Forest School on a Thursday afternoon. And I said, what did you do at Forest School this week? And they said, we played chess in the woods, then I would be a bit kind of like, sorry, you went to Forest School, what were you doing? And like, that's, it's not to do with chess being inappropriate, it's to do with holistically looking at all of what's available in there. I'm going to use the word diet, but I don't just mean food, I mean like educational diet, and going, so the sessions that we run are 2 full days long, so 20 minutes playing a board game is a small part of that diet compared to, do you know what I mean? You must find similar things with the work you're doing.
Yeah.
Thanks to everybody that's rating and reviewing the podcast on Spotify and on iTunes. It really helps get the podcast in front of more people and helps us spread the word about the amazing thing that is Forest School.
Yeah. I think, for me, because it's, I don't have that kind of forest school box. So I very much make sure that, you know, the expectations for what I'm doing are set from the outset. And so I feel like I have permission to play all the time. that's what we do. Some of the kids I do some loose bits of learning, and like, I'm always looking to try and incorporate learning and education into what I do, but mostly in trying to foster like a love of learning. So I guess I don't have that. Like, I can play Animal Crossing with my kids for 2 hours, and that's fine. That's that's what we do. But while we do that, we're always having conversations or talking about what we're looking at, or, you know, even, I don't know if you're familiar with Animal Crossing, but, you know, we'll play hide and seek in the museum and we'll talk about what we're seeing in the aquarium part, or life cycles of different insects and stuff. And I feel like my background is actually in science, so I draw that in a lot. Whether they like it or not. And I guess my goal is through the play to get to a place where they trust me to then, you know, be happy to do some learning.
Some stuff, Wem and I were doing some research about this. You found a really good blog, Wem, about gaming and flow state. Have you come across flow state before, Kat? This, you know.
I did click the link to that blog and kind of like browse the first bit of it. I've heard other people talk about it, and I think I understand what the concept is of it.
Yeah, just for listeners who might not have heard of Flodus, can you summarise it? I'm going to challenge you to say his name.
Oh, yeah, Nilo Csikszentmihalyi.
Oh, yes, please.
Got that
there
one,
you
mate.
Go.
I mean, that's I wouldn't know
I
if that's
to all this stuff on an audiobook. It's saved that thing. This is a complete tangent. But I feel like I've moved out of that world. You know, when you read a word for ages and you have no idea how to pronounce it, Audible, never going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Because I know exactly how to say it because I don't read it.
Well, you know how the reader of that particular audiobook says it. You don't know it's correct.
Flo's...
My absolute favorite thing, though, is when a kid says a word wrong and you can tell that it's because they've never heard it said out loud.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that's amazing.
Flo's state is... Well, I'm not going to give you like I can't really recite a definition, but flow state is basically that thing where you are fully present in the moment, normally because your body is occupied with a physical activity at some level. So lots of sports people will talk about being in a flow state where you're not thinking, you're just doing, you're like instinctively reaction, and you are sat in that perfect middle ground of it not being too easy, not being too challenging, but being just challenging enough that it holds all of your attention.
And time, all sense of time goes out the window. So you don't realize, you're like, you come out of it and you're like, what? I've been doing that for 2 hours? What on earth? How has that happened? Memories of it. So I think it can also happen when you're like writing. I don't necessarily think it has to be like a really big physical activity and probably gaming. I think, you know, as in online gaming probably takes you into that flow state. Yeah,
I maybe have trouble like resonating with it as an idea just because like attentionally with ADHD, I'm never really focused on just the one thing. Mm-hmm. And if I am, it's that hyper focus.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's right to say that that's flow, because I feel like the flow state kind of has a positive connotation to it. And I have strong feelings about sort of people who view, you know, ADHD as a superpower because I can do this thing. Well, when I'm doing that thing, I'm doing that thing for 6 hours. I've probably gotten completely absorbed in it in the middle of the kitchen floor in everybody's way. I am unaware of like any of my bodily needs. And it's really quite a harmful place for me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say I get that way when gaming as well. So I have to be pretty mindful of that. So I'm just not sure how qualified I am to talk about flow.
No.
Yeah, that's
I don't think it's ever experience.
But that's still like a massively useful like bit of lived experience for learners that we're working with because I think with all these things, like some people will learn about flow and then we'll go, well, that's what I have to get all of my learners to achieve. That's what I need to be getting them towards and setting it up. And like, you know, that can be a goal and that can be, well, I don't think that you can actually force flow, but I do think it is really useful to be able to have that mindset of like, some people won't be able to get into flow. And that's, you know, so like gaming might be, gaming might be like, I don't want to say as close as they can get because that sounds like they can't achieve it. But what I mean is like an equivalent for them is gaming and is being in that zone and is having all the like in that way that. Go on.
Yeah, definitely. Like in terms of like the, you know, like the dopamine, the good stuff going on in your brain, probably. Yeah.
Do you have the work that you're doing? Do you have much work where you're in like small groups, or is it predominantly one-to-one stuff?
When I'm doing sort of more of what we're talking about, I guess it's all one-to-one. I do have some groups who I do some sort of loosely teaching of science to a couple of home ed groups. And I have a coding group, and I'm hoping to start up a sort of tween-aged girls group for neurodivergent girls sort of around puberty. And again, that kind of, it's going to be arts-based and keeping hands busy and eyes down so that we can just facilitate whatever conversations need to happen.
That sounds great.
So that one is probably the closest to something that would be useful in this conversation, but that one hasn't started yet. So,
oh, good luck. That sounds amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited about that one.
So, where will, what, do you know where that will be?
Just well, that's why listening? It's, that's why it hasn't started yet. I'm okay. Hoping it'll be, I want to use the upstairs space at the Glorious Art House.
In Exeter.
In Exeter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Listeners, watch this space if you're local. That sounds awesome.
Thanks.
Sorry. No, I was going to ask about group stuff because I was wondering what your thoughts would be on, like, quite often one of the challenges that we face as, like, facilitators, educationalists, whatever you want to call it, is meeting multiple needs at the same time, sometimes contrasting needs, and that, like,
yeah.
It is quite interesting watching the roles that tabletop games and role-playing games and things like that can play in bringing those possibly disparate needs together. I wondered if you had experience around that or...
Yeah, well, it definitely, it provides a structure. Like, so I think that's where cooperative gaming is really good because... especially with a game like Forbidden Island, where you each have a role and then you work together, it opens it up for like a less confident personality could be guided by a more confident personality, but it's still your turn, you know? So you still, even if you're less confident, you're the one who then takes the actions. And I think that can be a really good way of crossing those,
it is if you've
got contrasting
friends.
Needs.
If you've got friends like me, you play cooperative tabletop games and one or two of them go, no, here's what you're doing on your turn. Here's what you're going to do with your move. And we're like...
Yeah, and then I guess that's where, as the facilitator, you essentially have to DM that situation, don't you? Like, so then it's about how you kind of compassionately and sympathetically try and even out that dynamic.
Yeah. Do you have any moments that you I'm going to go for like light bulb, like positive moments first in terms of like using kind of tabletop games with learners? Do you have any kind of moments, whether it be particular games or particular things that happened that you thought, yeah, this is like, absolutely, I'm doing the right thing by bringing this game out and by spending this time gaming together in this way?
Yeah. I mean, mostly it's... for some of my kids, it's provided that vehicle for connecting. So particularly a lot of the kids I work with are autistic with a PDA profile. Mm-hmm. So that's pathological demand avoidance. And a lot of the time, those kids just say no. And they don't want to. And they don't even... know why they don't want to. And I can relate because the more I've worked with kids like that, the more I realize that I think I have PDA as well. Like my partner will ask if he can get me something, if I want something, and I will just say no because I don't even think about it. I'm like, nope, I just can't. Don't. So I've had a couple of moments where I've realized that, like Forbidden Island with one girl I was working with, we played it every week. And it was the thing that really allowed us to trust and build that friendship. And then another, a boy that I work with, there's a it's a competitive one actually. It's a card game named Skyjo.
Bruce was telling me about that and saying, have I ever played it and do I know it? And I didn't. And it sounded really cool.
It is. It's really cool. And it's a nice game because it's there's strategy, but there's also luck. So it really evens the playing field. There's no you can't like get really, really good at it. It's a really nicely balanced game. And this boy likes to, we like to play Fortnite together. I say we like to, he likes to play Fortnite with me. Mm-hmm. I'm not crazy on Fortnite, but I play it because we connect over it. And, that's great. And a lot of the time he likes to control our sessions together. He likes to be in charge of what we're going to do. And if I suggest something, we don't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think something happened and we couldn't play Fortnite for a bit. And I was like, oh, hey, like I have this game in my bag. And it wasn't, I brought this for you. It was just happens to be in my bag. Do you want to play it? And so we did. But he, for whatever reason, really enjoyed it and now asks to play it. And it seems small, but that's huge.
Yeah.
And it's great because, you know, you have to do some mental math.
Never go back to mundane marshmallows ever again. Forest School Cooking, the cookbook, covers everything from how to build and use different types of outdoor ovens, stoves, and equipment right through to a range of different meals to keep anyone full and ready for the next adventure. Get your copy today on Amazon.
There's loads of amazing benefits.
That's in there. Fun. Like,
you're saying about the, you know, PDA profiles and stuff, and like, I have noticed there's definitely links between like human and non-human demands for some people, and whether those demands are like or requests. I'm calling them demands. You know, requests, demands, all these things. Because I was just thinking as we were talking about it, I was like, actually, if you wanted to look at examples of, like, you know, we talk about using declarative language all the time, you know, I have this in my bag. There's no request involved in that. It's just, it happens to be in my bag. I am feeling hungry is completely different to, would you like to come and get some food? All that, like, declarative language. But I was thinking about if you wanted to find, like, the opposite of that, I think I would go to board game instructions. Like the most demanding bit of text you could get, like, on your turn, you must move this, this, and this, or you must take this many turns. You must not, like, but it's not human. And I just find that really, it's just the rules.
Yeah, and like, it's just the rules.
And maybe there's something in terms of like hierarchy, like I was saying about, you know, the game only exists if you all agree to play the rules, but like equally, these pieces of cardboard, if you decide to fuck them up and rip them into pieces, you can do that. You are in complete like high status over this instruction manual, over this whatever, you know, whatever it is. But that's really interesting that like, well, I think that's interesting. Maybe no one else does. About like,
yeah, no, it is. And I noticed the same thing with like learning through apps. My kid wanted to learn piano. And so, and my sister was using this app. And so they'd seen that and we downloaded the app and we're doing it. And I was just kind of blown away watching the resilience that they could display when using this app to learn. And in my mind, I was playing the situation in a parallel dimension where I was trying to teach them to play piano. And I was just like, this would not be going this well. Like, you know, the app is making you do the same thing over and over and over again. And it's like stopping you in the middle of it when you get it wrong. And then it's like forcing you to do this. I'm like, oh my God, you'd have bitten my head off by now.
Yeah.
But because it's just a dumb tablet telling you.
Yeah.
You know, and it does completely change the expectation and that demand, I think.
That people find some people would find challenging, and whether that comes from, you know, lots of alternative holistic educators are like fully on board with like, I'm going to meet these learners where they are. I'm going to, you know, whatever they need, I can, you know, facilitate that. But there's something about like the need, if you could outline it as going, oh, what they need is non-human interaction. What they need is like, you know, something like that. And that hits a nerve for lots of people, because the rest of their job, particularly our job, like being outside in the woods and delivering forest school, so much of it is about human contact and human delivery and let's play games together and social interaction. And like, whether acknowledging that someone has a need for I don't want to say that tabletop games and board games are non-human socialization, but they kind of are. Then they're not.
It's a non-human facilitator, isn't it?
Yeah, and that touches a nerve for people who work as facilitators and might be like, no, everyone needs, you know.
Yeah,
and everyone needs me.
Yeah, it's a bit of a leveler as well, isn't it? If you're the adult kind of playing this game with a learner or a group of
learners. You have to play by the same rules as them.
It's completely leveling. Oh, haha. Yeah, and that to kind of just accept, right, my authority and the hierarchy is like blurry while you're in that world of the game.
I bring that kind of mentality to everything that I do with my kids. Like, I don't have authority. Mm-hmm. I only have as much control as they give me. Mm-hmm. Sort of, yeah. And it's really cool to talk about it with you guys, because I don't really think about it. I just kind of do it. And mm-hmm. I think because I share that same sort of neuro spiciness as the kids, and my only experience of kids really is that sort of neurodivergent side. Like I have a younger brother who's like 7 years younger than me. So we have also kind of an interesting parent sibling blurred lines. And of my two brothers, he's the one that has ADHD and autism as well. And so my memory of him as a kid was just like, oh, this is what kids are like. And then I had my kid and that's what my kid was like. And now I work with these kids and that's just what kids are like. Mm. And sometimes I forget that there are neurotypical children out there. I don't really remember where this thought started.
We were talking about like authority and
So I think I naturally just come in at the same level as the kids. I think that's really powerful because they know they're not used to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we talk about that in Forest School a lot in terms of community building and hierarchy and what kind of bits of the hierarchy are just sort of unavoidable in terms of, you know, you're the older person and you're in an environment where you are taking a lot of responsibility and you're taking responsibility for people's safety at quite high level in some cases and that kind of thing. And so there's some things you just can't avoid, but we're always striving to do the same thing to try and make it that we are all part of a community and no one's more important than anybody else. And we're here. For all of us, we're not here to do what we tell you to do. We've just, you know, so we might put some like ideas and structure on the board, but it's completely up to people whether they want to do it. We would never force somebody to take part in something just because we had the idea to do it. But I think we've both come from a teaching background, me at secondary and Lewis at primary, and there was definitely we both left because we didn't like it. It was a really uncomfortable feeling. But especially if you've been to school, the traditional school yourself, I think there's that like institutionalization, which we've talked about on the podcast as well before, of even when you're kind of shifting into this more alternative education role, whether that be home-aiding your kids or forest school or doing mentoring like you're doing, to kind of just relax into it. If you've come from that traditional schooling institution in some way, and you've got maybe that a little bit of that in there going, oh, I should be doing this, I should be, they should be learning more, or yeah, I should be providing more, and all this kind of thing, and just to relax and let it go and trust the kids and show them the respect, as you're kind of saying, that the learning will happen at their own pace through the kind of activities that they choose with you facilitating. It's actually quite a big leap of faith, I think. And yeah, I'm sure people listening to this will be on different parts of that journey if they are on that journey indeed, you know.
I have a thought about leveling.
Yeah,
that's just been percolating through.
A minute ago we were talking about that, you know, you don't have much of a hierarchy as an adult when you're playing the game. You know, you're playing by the same rules as them, which, and I was thinking about when I play games with my kids, quite often we level it by making it unfair for me so that I can play.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about double with that, weren't you? Yeah, can you explain that example? Sorry, maybe you were going to. Your microphone's gone weird.
I'm sorry, but as an adult, I feel like we need to be given all the advantages in double, not having it more for us.
Yeah, so, sorry, I'll try and explain what I was doing. So,
I just sit and watch children take cards in Dobble, and I'm like, so what? No.
Yeah, that's what I do, but I didn't always because my kids were younger, so I do understand where Lewis is coming from. But now there was a tipping point.
Yeah.
So I had to be like, oh, I'm really slow. Oh, okay, yeah, you won that, because I was being honest and just snatching the cards, and then my daughter was just in floods of tears. So I was like, okay, no, I can't. Yeah, do that.
Sometimes you feel like you've really broken their little spirits, don't you?
Exactly. But now she's got old enough that she is just absolutely smashing me every time. But sorry, Lewis, go for it. What were you going to say?
You've awakened some deep trauma from double
playing. This is therapy session now. This is double therapy. Yeah. Oh, God, double therapy would be really good with those Rorschach ink blots. If you just hold it up, you'd be like, it's a fucking cactus. I hate it. I'll try and get back. I'm going to have to walk myself there again. We were talking about adults playing by the same rules in it with board games, and that being a positive thing because it's a leveler. And I was thinking about playing games with my kids, and quite often there's some games that they just can't access, like bluffing. Like, we sometimes try and play Sheriff of Nottingham, which is like a bluffing game, or like some stuff where I just get, my kids are 3 and 5, so there's some things that are like just beyond them. But things like Dobble, they can play, but they can't, like you were saying, Wim, they can't play it. It would be ludicrously unfair for me to play it at the same level. So the way that we approach it is...
No, you've got to get those wins in while you can.
Right, but we flip the card and I shut my eyes and I count to 10. So they get 10 seconds to look, and then I start looking. And if they get it, then I go down to 9 seconds. And if they get it... So basically, I was trying to find where's the limit here. How much extra time do you actually need? And, you know, and if I got it right, I went back up a number. So if I was down to like 4 and then I got 1 that round, okay, I'm going back up to 5. So we're constantly like leveling this thing out.
I like that.
So that I can, you know, right back at the start, we were talking about like being authentic, and like that's what kids need from like facilitators a lot of the times. Like, that's the only way I can play and be authentic, is to go, okay, this is hard for me and hard for you, but it's equal, it's equitable, because we've made it unequal. And I was thinking about how readily, when we've had board games in the wood, when we play physical games in the woods, like tagging games or hiding games or anything that's like physically dominated, the learners in our longer term communities, not so much in holiday clubs, but the longer the community is, the more open they are with each other about physical things and going, you're really fast, so we need twice as many people to run, or like, you're bigger, so, or like, I'm smaller, so I need to carry the small bucket, and you're bigger, so you have to carry the bigger bucket. And they can do that, and there's rarely any like bit upset with that. They kind of just go, yeah, okay, I am faster, or yeah, no, I haven't been here as long, or whatever it is. But there's something about it moving into the like mental space with a board game that I would be really surprised to see learners go, like, I would be really surprised to see children that I work with come up with that double rule of, this is way too easy for me, so I'll cover my eyes. I just don't think they would treat mental disparity. I'm not saying mental disparity is a horrible phrase to have come out of my mouth, and I hate it, but I can't find a better one in this moment. I hope you understand what I mean.
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean.
Thank goodness.
But you did still say the words out loud.
I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to double down on it.
And I'm going to let you flounder on, because I'm scrabbling in my mind to try and think of an example of when I might have heard that in the woods. Because even if you don't bring board games into the woods, like, kids will still invent their own, like, crazy wild versions of it. So we had was it like noughts and crosses, but they drew a board with charcoal on a flat bit of wood. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And there was, and then there were like little wood cookies, and some were white and some were black, and they were turning them over and then inventing lots of rules. There was lots of like, oh no, actually you haven't won, because I've actually got this wood cookie with a spider drawn on it, and that just means that I win. And lots of those kind of discussions, and it was really fascinating to see. So I guess, I mean, that's not the same kind of leveling as you're talking about, but that is like, I can't deal with losing against you right now, so I'm just not going to. I just don't admit that you've won. Like, that, I find that so interesting. Especially if you as the adult aren't really involved in that, you know, you're just observing.
Yeah.
So that's not really the same as what you're talking about, Lewis, in terms of, well, you know, I'm younger than you, or I haven't played the game. What about that though? I found myself saying that. So do you know the game Hive, Kat?
I was just thinking of Hive when you said about the spider on the...
Yeah. 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 So that's become a real... you know, game that they've brought a lot.
It's got insects on it. It's forest school.
I love it.
It's got bugs on it. I'm also a sucker for like a nice tactile piece.
The noise is great, isn't it?
When
you slap together, oh, so nice. But I'm really rubbish at it, in the same way that I'm really rubbish at chess. I find it impossible to hold the memory of what each piece is allowed to do at the same time as deciding what to do, at the same time as watching my opponent.
Yeah, because you have to be like three moves ahead.
Holy mackerel. It is like higher thinking to the nth degree, and I just can't do it, and I've never been able to. It's not even that I'm just getting old. So I did find myself saying to a kid the other day, I was like, but am I allowed to like retract that move, because I'm rubbish and I've only played it twice, and can I just make another thing? Can you remind me of what this piece can do, like, every time?
What did they say?
So I was the one going, well, one person was playing with me and one person was observing, and the person playing was actually fine with it, but the person observing was like, no, don't tell her. Don't tell her. Don't remind her. And I was like, but dude, I've played this like twice and I'm rubbish.
It's harder in that situation though, for learners. And this is where I can tie my thought and your thought together. It's much easier in a physical sense to say, this isn't fun for me. Like, this isn't fun for me. You're catching me too fast. This isn't fun for me. I'm having to carry too much weight. It's really hard.
Or I'm really tired. I'm physically tired. Yeah. I need a drink.
But it's really hard to feel comfortable enough to go, this isn't fun for me. You're so much better than I am. That's what's hard. And it shouldn't be hard. And maybe that's, I'm having this at thought as live. Maybe where we need to pole bridge more. We need to verbalize that and model it for our learners more, to be like.
Definitely.
You can get out of playing Fortnite. You can just say it's not fun.
We play board games. No, we play board games with like a group of adults who are my partners, like friends from school. And we've had this conversation about those meetups sometimes, where the different personalities have different views on. So for the most part, people are happy to kind of like house rule things, but there are one or two people who that's absolutely not acceptable. These are the rules. This is gospel as written in the rule book. And then there's times when, like, not naming any names, Carcassonne.
Yeah.
Where you just, there's no way you're going to win. There's no way you're going to, like, the so game early. Is over for you.
That's what you mean. Yeah.
And yet you're tied into it. And there needs to be a way for you to just be like, actually, I'm going to go now. you guys carry on, but this is no longer fun.
Yeah.
And you kind of just become fodder for everyone else's gameplay. It's an interesting one in board games in particular.
It is, because it's such a, and you know, it's a feeling of that feeling of losing at a board game isn't actually an emotional feeling that we feel very often if we're living in quite a kind of privileged, okay life.
Yeah.
And this conversation has made me think about that in a really interesting way. In the same way, because I kind of wrote down just as we were talking, I was like, trauma and triggers and needs. And I was like, there is something. Yeah, because you were saying that about Double. And I played a game called Timeline with my other half. Have you ever played Timeline? Really simple. Cards. It's really lovely, but it's really very simple. So you can get different ones for like UK history or inventions or whatever themes. And you turn the card over and it'll have an event, but it won't have the date. So the Great Fire of London, and there'll already be three cards on the floor on the table. And you have to guess whether your event, the Great Fire of London, is earlier than that event on the table or later. And so obviously it gets more and more challenging as more cards get turned over and you've got this like long UK timeline, for example. And I had a card about something to do with Northern Ireland, and I didn't know. I had no idea when this was. And my other half was just like incredulous at me. He was like, you don't know. How do you not know that? And I was already kind of thinking, I'd get some really hard cards, and I just absolutely lost the plot. I smashed the cards all over the room.
Oh my God, you flipped the table.
Flipped the table. I was like, this, which obviously I can do with my partner. I still feel like, yeah, oh, that was a bit silly afterwards, but I wouldn't be able to do that if I was playing.
Yeah, but also with children. The kids have to do that though. And this is a really, like, just to move into like masking and like social meshing, and like it's really interesting to look at board games then as either a tool to, depending on what your view of masking is, this may change how you see this, but like some people might view that as like a safe, low stakes tool to practice masking so that it might be useful in situations where it's less optional or less low stakes or whatever else. Or you might see it as like unnecessary masking that you don't need to bring into a space. And that really depends on what level of like community and trust. And like you were saying, Kat, about like you need to be able to trust the people around you to play authentically, whether you're an adult or a child.
Yeah.
It's very,
at the end of this, are we actually reaching the point where we're questioning whether we're just deeply traumatizing children by playing board games? Is that where we've landed here today?
Can I recommend a game for you, though?
I don't think so.
Yeah. There's a really good game. Me. Kat, you might know. Yeah. It's a really good game called Shit Happens. Yeah. Are you aware of Shit Happens?
Yeah.
Incredible. It's 100 cards of bad events that might happen to you, including things like stepping on a porcupine, but also walking in on your parents having sex, all these like physical and psychological things. And they got loads of psychologists to rate them on a number of how traumatizing they are, 1 to 100. And similarly, you have a few cards down on the table, and then you pull out your card
and you have
that
to
says like kidney stones in a public bathroom. And you have to decide whether that is worse or better than stepping on a pocket. But yeah, it's really good.
Then what's already there?
Yeah.
I'll bring it to the woods.
But not one for kids.
Yeah. I think you should play that.
Yeah. No, I don't think, going back to what you said, I'm not for a second suggesting that it's traumatizing.
No, I know.
But I just wonder about, like, there's definitely something about, like, that feeling of losing, especially at a game which is requiring, as you know, you were saying, your mental faculties and your, you know, and I guess it comes down to as well what you're saying about that, those games which are a combination of luck and skill. And obviously, you know, even losing a game that's purely chance and luck still, like, bites sometimes. Oh,
I find that almost more frustrating than losing, like, genuinely losing a game because I didn't play well. Yeah. When it's, that's why I find SkyJo quite a nice balance of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't mind there being some luck, but I don't like being, like, losing a game and feeling like I had no chance.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think that's a really important part of it. And yeah, but I think there's value in losing. And yeah.
For sure. That's what I'm just trying to think about. Like, how to
like articulate what it is.
But for some people, that is,
I think it kind of falls in the same category as risk almost. It's like that idea of, you know, Forest School kind of supporting risky play and being in situations where something can actually happen to you, whether that's like breaking a limb or cutting yourself or even just like being rejected, like suggesting a game and then everyone going, no, why would we do that? You know, that kind of social level of risk. And that I think there's something about board games that is risky in that way because losing can really hurt.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay. You know, it's very unlikely that you will be deeply psychologically scarred unless you've been playing double against a very angry child time after time. That, you know, that is such a valuable experience. And so, and I can't, you know, trying to think about other...
Applications to complete Level 3 Forest School Leader Training here with us at Children of the Forest are now open. Train with me and Lewis at our Woodland site in Devon. We'd love to meet you in person. Visit myforestschooltraining.co.uk to find out more.
It is. It's good for it to happen in that safe place.
Yeah.
Like, it's good to practice losing.
Yeah.
I think. Just like... One of the kids I work with, not in a game context, but when we do a lot of drawing together. And to begin with, you know, it bothered them that I was better at drawing. And I was like, well, you know, you're not bad at drawing. You just haven't had the practice. And they would get super frustrated. And it seems like this thing that I said to them one time has stuck, and they'll bring it up with other people. And that, like, I'm like, if I've done one good thing, and he'll tell people that, you know, it's okay to make a mistake because you can, you know, you can just incorporate it. You can make it mean something different. And so I think, like, it's that same kind of value of learning how it's okay to lose. And you're still going to be okay afterwards. And you can just try it again.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about our role as the grown-ups in the situation in terms of modeling how we lose. But there's a kind of like a seesaw there, I think, about kind of losing gracefully and accepting, like, you know, conveying and saying out loud those things that you're saying about, like, you know, that sucks, but maybe I'll do better next time, or, you know, being reflective about it. Is one great kind of modeling. But then maybe there is also value in being authentic about going, like you said, Lewis, well, do you know what? I'm still kind of hurting from losing Hive earlier in the day. I don't quite think I'm ready to play that again right now, but I'd play something different with you in terms of a child requesting that you play and being aware of your own needs and modeling that you're being aware of your own needs rather than, like, even if you are like, your soul has been destroyed by a child beating you at Hive for the fifth time and going, okay, I'll do it again, even though this is actually, you know, melding together with loads of other rubbish that's happening in my life right now. And maybe I'm just a rubbish human. You know, if you're getting to that level to go, actually, I just don't think I can right now, could also be really powerful in terms of modeling
acceptance
of needs. I don't know. Yeah.
Depends on your role, doesn't it? Like, we, again, like I said at the start, like that, I think we've got the breathing room to do that over multiple 6-hour days in the woods. We can rebuff politely, and with some good modeling, we can rebuff a play invitation and go, oh, I've got my own needs, you know, to do this. Whereas I imagine in your work, you're not really able to turn up and go, no, I'm not really doing it today.
Yeah. I think, yeah, there are times when, I don't know, it's hard to think of. I've definitely said no to things. More probably in the video game context than like outside of the video game. I try really hard to not say no to stuff, but sometimes my eyes just cannot cope with like another game of Fortnite. Mm-hmm. Because as I like to tell my kids, I've been playing Minecraft since before some of them were born. But because I started playing Minecraft on PC when I got a Switch and was using that to play with some of my kids, like I found that transition really difficult, being on that smaller screen, and just somehow the movement made me really dizzy and made me feel really quite nauseous. So there were times when I'd be like, I can't right now. And I think it is all about doing that mindfully of, you know, I never just say no, because they deserve the explanation. I'm not in charge, so it's not like that. But yeah, sometimes I'll be like, you know what? I actually have too much of a headache to be doing that right now. Could we do something off of the screen? Which I feel like is modeling
good self-care.
Good stuff for them. Yeah. And it's never been a problem. Like, that's the thing. Like, you would sort of expect sometimes when they're really into it for that to cause an issue. But because they understand that I'm not just saying no because I want to be in charge and I have my own set of rules, like, because we're doing this kind of collaborative play together. I've never had an issue with coming off when I've needed to say no.
I'm conscious of how much of your evening we're taking up. I'm very much enjoying chatting. But
that's all right. No, it's nice to chat.
People listening who are thinking that they might want to, like, say they don't have a board gaming background in their personal life, but they do want to go, okay, what? Where can I go to look for some stuff? Because I think lots of people will know Monopoly and Connect Four and things like that from their own childhood, but board games are so much more than they used to be. Do you have any resources or places that you can recommend people go and look or things like that?
Gosh. Locally to us in Exeter, we have Board on South Street. I don't know if you guys have been there.
I've seen it, but I've never been in. Is that a board game cafe?
It's a board game cafe, and they're popping up all over the place. So they have a library of games, and you go in and they serve food, they have tables, and the staff know the games. So they'll come over and ask if you need help. Like, obviously, a lot of people who go there are really into board games, and they go there to borrow the games and play them. But if you don't know what you want to play, if you're not familiar with things, then they can help to choose a game with you and help you set up the board and get to grips with the instructions, because a lot of the tabletop games are pretty complicated and it can be kind of overwhelming when you open up the box and there's all of the pieces and the setup and the rules to get through. So I think they are amazing in that they take that away completely. So if you're a complete novice and a bit overwhelmed, then they can help you get started.
We have the opposite problem, though, which is that we went to I don't think it was bored. I think it was somewhere else. My wife and I are very like British in terms of like, we don't actually like to talk and socialize with people outside. And we were like, picked up a game, sat down at the table, and somebody came over and was like, have you played this before? And we were like, no, no, we're just going to open it up. And the person there, I'm going to do it now for you guys on camera. I think he just went like, you have been dropped in a magical day. And like, we both immediately went, and he did like big jazz hands, and they're just, I nearly vomited with cringe. Like, I just really wanted to be like, there's no social way of me going, stop, stop now, please stop.
Oh my God. So that's amazing. Like,
just be prepared for that.
He was just trying to give you an immersive experience.
Very immersive.
And you hated it.
Eyes down, please. Crafting.
Okay, so maybe it's not for everyone.
But there are lots of, I get a lot of stuff from, like, there's loads of YouTube channels of board games.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to say. There's, like, Let's Play YouTube channels where you can actually watch. I enjoyed one, you know, what's it called? Felicia Day has, like, her whole kind of umbrella of things. And one of the shows was hosted by Will Wheaton. And it was, Let's Play.
It's just called Tabletop.
Tabletop.
It's a good show.
Yes. It's just called Tabletop. It is really good. So, and it's really entertaining as well, because you just watch all these adults cursing over game rules, which is beautiful. And yeah, so that's where I found a few of our games. I also have a nerdy partner who came preloaded. It worked that way because we don't actually have any storage for it at the moment, so we just kind of have a wall of board games against that wall. And then there's board game stores, obviously. I mean, I don't know if your listeners tend to be local here or
all over the world,
everywhere, but yeah. Yeah, there are nerds out there who are very happy to share their to drop you in a mystical land of
amazing.
I think I come across them a bit randomly now.
Level, once you're in the echo chamber, you're in the echo chamber, I think.
Yeah.
That's with lots of things.
Yeah.
But I can, it's getting later and later into the evening. I can hear my own bed calling me, I'm afraid.
I can hear a cat scratching at the door, so.
I can hear my tummy rumbling because I haven't had my tea yet. But yeah, thank you, Kat, so, so much.
It's been really nice.
We'll put links to your stuff on the podcast notes if you like. But if people are listening, where can they find out more about what you do?
So I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Cat's Little Geeks. I post there fairly frequently, just little snippets of what I'm up to with the kids I work with and what I'm doing in my life that's related to it.
Yeah. Do you still do your like science-based newsletter?
No, I haven't been doing the newsletter. That kind of evolved into a couple of groups.
Okay.
I really enjoyed doing the newsletter in lockdowns, but
yeah, we enjoyed it too. I was really into the one about black holes.
Oh yeah, that was popular. One of the kids I work with even made a stop motion Lego video about black holes.
Whoa.
It was really cool. That's the cool thing. Like, letting kids follow their own little path. That's my favorite for my science groups. They kind of just get a topic and then I get to see where they take it. And
magic.
Cool. It is.
Right.
Great.
Thanks, mate.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Cool. That was nice chatting. Bye.